Spider.
The Baron reactivated the door field, blanked it against all energy penetration.
You finally tired of him, eh? Raban asked.
His voice fell flat and lifeless in the energy-blanketed room.
I will say a thing to you just this once, the Baron rumbled. You insinuate that I obliterated Piter as one obliterates a trifle.
He snapped fat fingers.
Just like that, eh? I am not so stupid, nephew. I will take it unkindly if ever again you suggest by word or action that I am so stupid.
Fear showed in the squinting of Raban's eyes. He knew within certain limits how far the old Baron would go against family. Seldom to the point of death, unless there were outrageous profit or provocation in it. But family punishments could be painful.
Forgive me, my lord Baron, Raban said.
He lowered his eyes as much to hide his own anger as to show subservience.
You do not fool me, Raban, the Baron said.
Raban kept his eyes lowered, swallowed.
I make a point, the Baron said. Never obliterate a man unthinkingly, the way an entire fief might do it through some due process of law. Always do it for an overriding purpose, and know your purpose.
Anger spoke in Raban.
But you obliterated the traitor, Yui. I saw his body being carried out as I arrived last night.
Raban stared at his uncle, suddenly frightened by the sound of those words. But the Baron smiled.
I'm very careful about dangerous weapons, he said. Dr. Yui was a traitor. He gave me the Duke.
Strength poured into the Baron's voice.
I suborned a doctor of the Sook School, the Inner School. You hear, boy? But that's a wild sort of weapon to leave lying about. I didn't obliterate him casually.
Does the Emperor know you suborned a Sook doctor?
This was a penetrating question, the Baron thought. Have I misjudged this nephew?
The Emperor doesn't know it yet, the Baron said, but his Sardaukar are sure to report it to him. Before that happens, though, I'll have my own report in his hands through Chome Company channels. I will explain that I luckily discovered a doctor who pretended to the conditioning. A false doctor, you understand? Since everyone knows you cannot counter the conditioning of a Sook school, this will be accepted.
Ah, I see, Raban murmured.
And the Baron thought,
Indeed, I hope you do see. I hope you do see how vital it is that this remains secret.
The Baron suddenly wondered at himself. Why did I do that? Why did I boast to this fool nephew of mine, the nephew I must use and discard? The Baron felt anger at himself. He felt betrayed.
It must be kept secret, Raban said. I understand.
The Baron sighed.
I give you different instructions about Arrakis this time, nephew. When last you ruled this place, I held you in strong rein. This time, I have only one requirement.
My lord,
income.
Income?
Have you any idea, Raban, how much we spent to bring such military force to bear on the Atreides? Do you have even the first inkling of how much the guild charges for military transport?
Expensive, eh?
Expensive.
The Baron shot a fat arm toward Raban.
If you squeeze Arrakis for every cent it can give us for 60 years, you'll just barely repay us.
Raban opened his mouth, closed it without speaking.
Expensive, the Baron sneered. The damnable guild monopoly on space would have ruined us if I hadn't planned for this expense long ago. You should know, Raban, that we bore the entire brunt of it. We even paid for transport of the Sardaukar.
And not for the first time, the Baron wondered if there ever would come a day when the guild might be circumvented. They were insidious, bleeding off just enough to keep the host from objecting until they had you in their fist where they could force you to pay and pay and pay. Always the exorbitant demands rode upon military ventures.
Hazard rates,
the oily guild agents explained. And for every agent you managed to insert as a watchdog in the guild bank structure, they put 2 agents into your system.
Insufferable.
Income, then,
Raban said. The Baron lowered his arm, made a fist.
You must squeeze.
And I may do anything I wish, as long as I squeeze?
Anything.
The cannons you brought,
Raban said.
Could I... I'm removing them, the Baron said.
But you...
You won't need such toys. They were a special innovation and are now useless. We need the metal. They cannot go against a shield, Raban. They were merely the unexpected. It was predictable that the Duke's men would retreat into cliff caves on this abominable planet. Our cannon merely sealed them in.
The Fremen don't use shields.
You may keep some laser guns if you wish.
Yes, my lord. And I have a free hand.
As long as you squeeze.
Raban's smile was gloating.
I understand perfectly, my lord.
You understand nothing perfectly, the Baron growled. Let us have that clear at the outset. What you do understand is how to carry out my orders. Has it occurred to you, nephew, that there are at least 5 million persons on this planet?
Does my lord forget that I was his regent Siridhar here before? And if my lord will forgive me, his estimate may be low. It's difficult to count a population scattered among sinks and pans the way they are here. And when you consider the Fremen of...
The Fremen aren't worth considering.
Forgive me, my lord, but the Sardaukar believe otherwise.
The Baron hesitated, staring at his nephew.
You know something?
My lord had retired when I arrived last night. I took the liberty of contacting some of my lieutenants from before. They've been acting as guides to the Sardaukar. They report that a Fremen band ambushed a Sardaukar force somewhere southeast of here and wiped it out.
Wiped out a Sardaukar force?
Yes, my lord.
Impossible!
Raban shrugged.
Fremen defeating Sardaukar, the Baron sneered.
I repeat only what was reported to me, Raban said. It is said this Fremen force already had captured the Duke's redoubtable Thufir Hawat.
Ah!
The Baron nodded, smiling.
I believe the report, Raban said. You've no idea what a problem the Fremen were.
Perhaps, but these weren't Fremen your lieutenant saw. They must have been Atreides men trained by Hawat and disguised as Fremen. It's the only possible answer.
Again, Raban shrugged.
Well, the Sardaukar think they were Fremen. The Sardaukar already have launched a program to wipe out all Fremen.
Good. But it'll keep the Sardaukar occupied, and we'll soon have Hawat. I know it. I can feel it. Ah, this has been a day. The Sardaukar off hunting a few useless desert bands, while we get the real prize.
My lord...
Raban hesitated, frowning.
I've always felt that we underestimated the Fremen, both in numbers and in...
Ignore them, boy. They're rabble.
It's the populous towns, cities, and villages that concern us.
A great many people there, eh?
A great many, my lord.
They worry me, Raban.
Worry you?
Oh, 90% of them are of no concern. But there are always a few, houses minor and so on, people of ambition who might try a dangerous thing. If one of them should get off Arrakis with an unpleasant story about what happened here, I'd be most displeased. Have you any idea how displeased I'd be?
Raban swallowed.
You must take immediate measures to hold a hostage from each house minor, the Baron said. As far as anyone off Arrakis must learn, this was straightforward house-to-house battle. The Sardaukar had no part in it, you understand? The Duke was offered the usual quarter and exile, but he died in an unfortunate accident before he could accept. He was about to accept, though. That is the story. And any rumor that there were Sardaukar here, it must be laughed at.
As the Emperor wishes it, Raban said.
As the Emperor wishes it.
What about the smugglers?
No one believes smugglers, Raban. They are tolerated, but not believed. At any rate, you'll be spreading some bribes in that quarter, and taking other measures which I'm sure you can think of.
Yes, my lord.
Two things from Arrakis, then, Raban. Income and a merciless fist. You must show no mercy here. Think of these clods as what they are, slaves, envious of their masters, and waiting only the opportunity to rebel. Not the slightest vestige of pity or mercy must you show them.
Can one exterminate an entire planet? Raban asked.
Exterminate?
Surprise showed in the swift turning of the Baron's head.
Who said anything about exterminating?
Well, I presumed you were going to bring in new stock, and
I said squeeze, nephew, not exterminate. Don't waste the population. Merely drive them into utter submission. You must be the carnivore, my boy.
He smiled, a baby's expression in the dimpled fat face.
A carnivore never stops. Show no mercy. Never stop. Mercy is a chimera. It can be defeated by the stomach rumbling its hunger, by the throat crying its thirst, You must be always hungry and thirsty.
The Baron caressed his bulges beneath the suspensors.
Like me.
I see, my lord.
Rabanne swung his gaze left and right.
It's all clear, then, nephew?
Except for one thing, uncle. The planetologist, Kynes.
Ah, yes, Kynes.
He's the Emperor's man, my lord. He can come and go as he pleases. And he's very close to the Fremen. Married one.
Kynes will be dead by tomorrow's nightfall.
That's dangerous work, uncle, killing an Imperial servant.
How do you think I've come this far this quickly?
The Baron demanded. His voice was low, charged with unspeakable adjectives.
Besides, you need never have feared Kynes would leave Arrakis. You're forgetting that he's addicted to the spice.
Of course.
Those who know will do nothing to endanger their supply, the Baron said. Kynes certainly must know.
I forgot, Rabanne said.
They stared at each other in silence. Presently, the Baron said,
Incidentally, you will make my own supply one of your first concerns. I've quite a stockpile of private stuff, but that suicide raid by the Duke's men got most of what we'd stored for sale.
Rabanne nodded.
Yes, my lord.
The Baron brightened.
Now, tomorrow morning, you will assemble what remains of organization here, and you'll say to them, Our sublime Padishah Emperor has charged me to take possession of this planet and end all dispute.
I understand, my lord.
This time, I'm sure you do. We will discuss it in more detail tomorrow. Now, leave me to finish my sleep.
The Baron deactivated his door field, watched his nephew out of sight.
A tank brain, the Baron thought. Muscle-minded tank brain. They will be bloody pulp here when he's through with them. Then, when I send in Fade Rotha to take the load off them, they'll cheer their rescuer. Beloved Fade Rotha, benign Fade Rotha, the compassionate one who saves them from a beast. Fade Rotha, a man to follow and die for. The boy will know by that time how to oppress with impunity. I'm sure he's the one we need. He'll learn. And such a lovely body. Really a lovely boy.
At the age of 15, he had already learned silence. From A Child's History of Muad'Dib by the Princess Irulan. As Paul fought the Thopter's controls, he grew aware that he was sorting out the interwoven storm forces, his more than mentat awareness computing on the basis of fractional minutiae. He felt dust fronts, billowings, mixings of turbulence, an occasional vortex. The cabin interior was an angry box lighted by the green radiance of instrument dials. The tan flow of dust outside appeared featureless, but his inner sense began to see through the curtain. I must find the right vortex, he thought. For a long time now, he had sensed the storm's power diminishing, but still it shook them. He waited out another turbulence. The vortex began as an abrupt billowing that rattled the entire ship. Paul defied all fear to bank the Thopter left. Jessica saw the maneuver on the attitude globe.
Paul!
She screamed. The vortex turned them, twisting, tipping. It lifted the Thopter like a chip on a geyser, spewed them up and out, a winged speck within a core of winding dust lighted by the second moon. Paul looked down, saw the dust-defined pillar of hot wind that had disgorged them, saw the dying storm trailing away like a dry river into the desert, moon-gray motion growing smaller and smaller below as they rode the updraft.
We're out of it, Jessica whispered.
Paul turned their craft away from the dust in swooping rhythm while he scanned the night sky.
We've given them the slip, he said.
Jessica felt her heart pounding. She forced herself to calmness, looked at the diminishing storm. Her time sense said they had ridden within that compounding of elemental forces almost 4 hours, but part of her mind computed the passage as a lifetime. She felt reborn.
It was like the litany, she thought. We faced it and did not resist. The storm passed through us and around us. It's gone, but we remain.
I don't like the sound of our wing motion, Paul said. We suffered some damage in there.
He felt the grating, injured flight through his hands on the controls. They were out of the storm, but still not out into the full view of his prescient vision. Yet they had escaped, and Paul sensed himself trembling on the verge of a revelation. He shivered. The sensation was magnetic and terrifying, and he found himself caught on the question of what caused this trembling awareness. Part of it, he felt, was the spice-saturated diet of Arrakis. But he thought part of it could be the litany, as though the words had a power of their own. I shall not fear. Cause and effect. He was alive despite malignant forces, and he felt himself poised on a brink of self-awareness that could not have been without the litany's magic.